44 pairs of socks and have them hanging out on the line. I can start an iron 24 shirts before you can count from 1 to 9. I can scoop up a great big dipper full of lard from the dripping can. Throw the skillet, go out and do my shopping, be back before it melts in the pan. Cause I'm a woman, W-O-M-A-N. I'll say it again. And scrub till this whole house is shining like a dime. Feed the baby, grease the car, and powder my face at the same time. Get all dressed up, go out and swing till 4 a.m. and then lay down at 5, jump up at 6, and start all over again. Cause I'm a woman, a W-O-M-A-N. I'll say it again. If you come to me sickly, if you come to me all hexed up, you know I'm gonna break the spell. If you come to me hungry, you know I'm gonna fill you full of grits. If it's loving you're liking, I'll kiss you and give you the shivering fits. Cause I'm a woman, W-O-M-A-N. I'll say it again. I got a $20 gold piece, says there ain't nothing I can do.
All the things that she could do because she's a woman. That's Peggy Lee with one of her signature songs, I'm a Woman. And that kind of gives us a clue as to where we're going today in our discussion. It is, after all, the beginning of Women's History Month. And we closed out African American History Month yesterday, and today begins Women's History Month. Needless to say, the content of Peggy Lee's song has changed a lot in terms of the political accomplishments of women in the United States. It's no longer about being a domestic goddess. It's also about getting involved in the politics of the world and being influential in political change. So that's a difference, a great difference indeed. But still, that's my girl. Today marks the beginning, as I said, of Women's History Month, which, quote, honors and celebrates the struggles and achievements of American women throughout the history of the United States, unquote. This is according to a Library of Congress guide on national observances and commemorative months. It's a good idea, isn't it? That all these various constituencies are being recognized via special celebrations and commemorations. And it's a way of giving recognition to these groups, isn't it? Isn't it a good thing? Well, we're going to discuss today that it may not necessarily be a good thing. It could possibly be something else, that national so-called heritage celebrations also might be used to thwart or interrupt popular movements for justice, equality, and power. That's where we're heading today. We used as an example in this discussion, as we began it, the Black History Month commemoration. And it was a feeling, I mean, we still have a way to go in discussing it, but there was enough of an indication that there were concerns about whether Black History Month actually achieves its objectives and whether people understand that it should be more than simply having cultural events. do these things, the marches and so forth, they're very good because in a large sense, it does communicate to the public that there is a recognition of particular constituencies, and that is very, very good. But at some point, we have to evaluate whether these things are still largely ceremonial, or whether they have the potential, or whether, in fact, they have achieved parity, helped these constituencies achieve parity in American society. This, for me, as it relates to the African American History Month celebrations, I think we need to revisit this idea about celebrations. It's not enough. And the celebrations themselves, I see more and more evidence of these celebrations and commemorations as pacification programs. Look at all these nice dark people. Yes, a couple of little, a few bad things happened along the way, but they've got a movie now. And it actually was at the center of the so-called accomplishment of the African American community this year. It doesn't, and it didn't, not in one significant way, increase the power equation. It in no way, if anything, it underscored the lack of political power, the total manipulation of this particular community by other means, and it therefore served as more of a distraction. And this has been going on for years. What ought to be conveyed during, say, Black History Month is the historicity associated with being Black in America. And it's not a pretty picture. It is not supposed to amount to nice little gatherings where people sing, "We shall overcome," and whatnot, because fact is, we are overcome. That we shall overcome, we are overcome. And at the end of the month, there is no tally that reflects an increased awareness among African Americans of their history, even, let alone the ongoing report about strides and inroads being made in the direction of justice and equality and freedom, all the things that are at the root of these celebrations. So one can credibly argue that the designation of Black History Month, although very well intentioned, and it still could be a major force in galvanizing this community, which is so badly tattered at the moment. Like any other community that is oppressed, these are the things that help bind a community together, give it a sense of sameness in terms of recognition of the history of struggle. But when it is watered down, when it becomes literally, a mindless, meaningless celebration, it defeats the purpose. That is not what Carter G. Woodson had intended in terms of history. He had intended that there be a connection between an awareness of history and the formulation of systems and actions that would counteract the intended plan, which is to push black folks out of the way in every way possible. Just push them out of the way. Sometimes permanently. And so I think we ought to ask the question, are these heritage months, we beginning today, Women's Heritage Month, if you will, and then there would be more, there's Hispanic Heritage Month. I looked up in the Library of Congress all these various heritage months that have been declared by various presidents. And something very interesting occurred. And I just want to read some of this to you and find out whether you found the same interesting things. Okay, African American History Month is in February. What is the purpose? To celebrate the contributions that African Americans have made to American history in their struggles for freedom and equality, and deepens our understanding of our nation's history. Well, you know, that's awkwardly stated, isn't it? It is not about the contributions that people have made, they hear. So that's not a contribution. It clearly indicates that there is American history, which is the supreme history. Others merely contribute to it. You see, I find that insulting. Then they go for American Indian Heritage Month. That is in November. It recognizes and celebrates the accomplishments of the peoples who were the original inhabitants, explorers, and settlers of the United States. Wow. But they're calling it the American Indian. We had no Indians here. We had indigenous people. We had First Nations here. We didn't have Indians. And it's not about their contribution. Their contribution began since they lived here. It is, if you want to use the word contribution and accomplishments, the fact is that they've been ahead of everybody else. So it's, you know, it's not that we should celebrate their contributions. This is their land. This is their country. All right, we have May coming up. That would be Asian Pacific Heritage Month. It is a month to celebrate the contributions of Asian Pacific Americans Asian Pacific Americans have made to American history, society, and culture. The dominant theme is there is American history. They're not saying white supremacy history. They're not saying white history, but there's American history. And everybody else makes a small contribution to the dominant history. And they give you a whole month to do it. Let's look at how they describe Jewish American Heritage Month in May. Jewish American Heritage Month is a month to celebrate the contributions of Jewish Americans that they have made to America since they first arrived in New Amsterdam in 1654. It is the only, I should say, a little bit more than the standard explanation of the contributions people have made. But the fact is still, they have contributed to America. And this is why there's Jewish American Month. Okay. We have Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride Month in June. And this is to commemorate the events of June 1969 and works to achieve equal justice and equal opportunity for LGBT Americans. Now, all of this, the intention is very good. Very good. But even in the explanation, it is being made clear that you're not part of the mainstream. You're being recognized for the particular thing, a particular thing or the particular things your community has done to improve or to augment American history, not the other way around. All right, we have National Hispanic Heritage Month in September. And this is being done, it celebrates and recognizes the contributions of Hispanic Americans to American society and culture, and to honor five of our Central American neighbors who celebrate their independence in September. Again, it is very clear, even in the Library of Congress, as it explains officially what these heritage months and celebrations are all about, it still is predicated on the apartness, the differences, and the, how should I say, the standing explanation is there is American history, which is number one. Number one. Whatever that is. American history is the history of white supremacy. All these other observations and celebrations and commemorations, they give you to placate yourself that you are, in fact, American. And here's their description for Women's History Month. It honors and celebrates the struggles and achievements of American women throughout the history of the United States. They mean, of course, white women. Because they just singled out all these other communities, and, you know, they have a month to kind of, or maybe a day, a special day set aside to celebrate their culture. But there is no guessing about the fact that there is the dominant white supremacist American culture, and everybody else might have a history, but it is subservient to this idea of the ruling dominant American culture. And in turn, we get very excited about the fact that, my gosh, finally, they're recognizing that we're here, when the attitude ought to be very different with regard to what they're calling the American Indian, which is insulting to call it that, American Indian Heritage Month. They're still promoting this bogus notion that the First Nations people are really Indians. And somehow the nation's first peoples are going along with this. No, they were the first ones. This is their country. It is not about the contributions they have made. It is about their existence despite being targeted for annihilation. They still persist. They still live. And even so, they're still cast in this idea that they belong to someplace else. They're Indians. Even as they say, unwittingly, about the fact that this is their culture, this is the day the month that they celebrate their culture. But as aliens, as if this is not their land, as if this is not their history. They were the first ones, and they are the true Americans, if you will. So this was kind of percolating in my mind when we celebrated African American Month and now Women's Heritage Month. But you see how defined these things are. They know what they're doing. They give you a month to fool yourself. They give you a month to keep you quiet. It is propaganda. A month of, quote, celebrations and commemorations and so forth truly is a well-intentioned thing. It's a well-intentioned idea. But as you see it defined in the Library of Congress on this, the way they explain these holidays and these commemorative months, you see that they are not at all disillusioned about the power equation here. They give you a moment to kid yourself into believing that you do have power. Now, that brings us to Women's History Month. And again, the description from the Library of Congress says, this is a month in which the contributions of women are honored. But of course, we know it's not about all women. It's not about all women being honored for their contributions to American history and the struggles they have had and pulled through to honor that. No, they gave you Black History Month. Let the Black women have their celebrations in that month. And so put it all together. Black women, Black men, Black children, yeah. Black is beautiful in the month of February. That finishes the obligation to recognize anybody's contribution beyond February. What the Women's History Month program seems to suggest is that it is honoring, as they describe it, it celebrates the struggles and achievements of American women. What are those? Who are American women? Again, I just said, to my mind, who American women are. They're the First Nations women. But no. They know exactly what they're saying. It is to celebrate the struggles and achievements of American women throughout the history of the United States. So now there is a history of the United States, and then there's everybody else's history. It's not one and the same. It's not to be construed as being one and the same. Now, this is something we know intuitively, and we know it, and we've known it for a long time. In so many ways, America admits that it is an apartheid society. It's a race-based society. And within that construct, we have all these struggles occurring. Also on the basis of race and class. So these are massive propaganda efforts, and they've been working quite well. People are out there on these designated either days or during these designated months, and a great deal of thought and preparation go into celebrating whatever it is, whichever farm you belong to, you know, you get your chance to celebrate. But does this Heritage Month policy, does it do much to change the power equation? I would argue that we're seeing here with the Women's History Month an attempt to do just that. This is not going to be a women's, any ordinary American Women's Month. This is now occurring in a crucible of a power fight. White women are organizing for power. They don't care about being recognized for their contributions. This is about power, raw power. We've discussed this. And it is not about powerful women. The setup here is that it has come to the point where there's going to be a face-off between white women and white men. This is the battle they've been having for a long time. Because essentially, white women and white men both agree that they are to be in charge. They are to be supreme. They are part of the supremacy of America. There hasn't been a lot of documentation about white women parting ways with the sexist, racist way of operating, generally, that the white men had implemented. Not at all. The fight is they want parity with white men on the matter of who they can be superior to and implement that superiority. I know people are going to say, what the heck are you saying? I'm saying it. White women have not played, on the historical record, they have not bothered themselves, or it hasn't been a major part of their fight to affirm the rights of women of color in any form. I mean, you get a smattering here and you get one person over there, but essentially they agree with the paternalistic, sexist, and misogynistic policies of white men because they benefit. They benefit from it. And they have benefited from it for a long time. Now, though, it is not that they benefit. It is now that they want control. Now,
It is not up to me to decide what white women should have as their political objectives. And that's not the question I'm raising. I just state and I recognize that in struggles for justice and equality and all of that, white women have not been nearly as exercised about these matters as they have been, say, in recent years, with a push toward not just parity, but supremacy themselves in policies and in the direction of the nation, in the power of control. They absolutely, for the most part, they agree. They have no philosophical difference, not as expressed, specifically expressed, with the white male-dominated power structure. They just want a particular amount of leverage within it. The struggles, for example, of school desegregation, the struggles for equal housing, these struggles were led by women, yes, but women of color. White women did not participate in any significant way in these kinds of people's struggles. No, as long as they had, a privileged life, and as long as they were able to reap the benefits of whiteness, they were okay with that. Women of color, indigenous women, step aside. And even among women, the idea was that they are to dominate and control what happens in these various communities of women. So that's a major, major contradiction. So we continue our discussion from yesterday, in which we recognized the way that identity politics filtered into these heritage celebrations, and whether they have done, on the whole, they have done the job of promoting parity and justice and a systemic turnaround in things for their various constituencies. Could they be used in that way? Or is it more a way of kind of going along to get along? We have a day, that means the system recognizes us and is willing to give us a day's worth of parades. Do we see things coming out of this? Could it happen? I think there might be great potential for that, but it hasn't happened over these many decades. And it doesn't seem as if that is part of the agenda, that these are ways in which people can begin to galvanize their power to achieve objectives that would benefit all. We just had, as I said, we just had with this movie, almost $1 billion injected into the system of control by blacks who got nothing out of this, but yet whose history and culture were exploited to the max. They gave an industry in 1 week, or perhaps 2 weeks flat, almost $1 billion. Now, that is incredible economic power. It is not harnessed for the good of the black community. but it uses the vehicle of black culture. These are culture vultures. They understand exactly what they're doing. The white industry is dying. How do you make money in a dying industry? Or in an industry that is evolving so fast you can't keep up with the changes? Since what you know is the standard operating procedure, you tweak the standard operating procedure. You maximize your advertising and marketing budget. You recognize that there's gold in them thar ghettos. And you create a product specifically for people who are emotionally in need. They want validation. They're psychologically affected. And we turn their disabilities, if you will. They understand themselves not to be part of society. They understand themselves as being oppressed. They get it. But here you come. You make a nice move. You come up with a formula that gives them some kind of reason to feel proud of being black. You're distorting their culture. You are brutally utilizing their culture. But you have figured out a formula that in 2 weeks flat, you could make $1 billion, mostly from these same communities. And you use Black History Month as also an underpinning for how concerned and attached you are to the Black community. You're doing your very best to give them the very best of entertainment. See? So let's talk about this today. To what use can these heritage months and celebrations be put to galvanize broad political power? And that power helping to produce a far more equitable, far more just society. Is it in the cards? Has it been done, in your view, in any particular way that suggests that, yeah, it could be turned around? But I tell you, we better get serious and understand how the system works. So we'll take your calls at 888-874-4888 after this brief break, and we come back to your thoughts.
I got a $20 gold piece, says there ain't nothing I can do. I can make a dress out of a feed bag, and I can make a man out of you, 'cause I'm a
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. And just a reminder before we get to your calls, mark your calendars, if you can, on March 11th. That is the plan. On March 11th, I'll be at the Community Church. I'll be speaking at the Community Church, which is located at 40 East 35th Street, Park Avenue in Manhattan, at 1:30 p.m. So to reiterate the things you need to know, Sunday, March 11, at 1:30 p.m. at the Community Church of New York, located at 40 East 35th Street off Park Avenue. I'd love to be able to shake your hand, give you a hug, and I'd love to enjoy the wonder and beauty of fellowship. that we have on this program, but in person, it would be that much more meaningful. So mark your calendar and make it a point to be there on that Sunday. Now let's go to our calls. Henry from Chicago, you're starting us off today.
Hey, Teresa, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
It's cold again, so.
<That's> cold. The eternal story.
Yeah. In regards to the topic of today, you know, I think that the intentions of what Dr. Carter G. Woodson had has been significantly watered down. And I think you explained it earlier in regards to his intentions on why we should have some sort of remembrance of our history. However, I propose a suggestion that, you know, somebody told me, which I thought was pretty interesting, whereas history should, you know, obviously and theoretically, our history should be recognized and celebrated, you know, all months of the year. However, he suggested that we should commemorate Black History Month for 11 months and February be Black Futures Month, where we try to recognize the accomplishment or not recognize the accomplishment, but try to understand where our future is going and how we can improve our situation in the future. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, here's the thing. I'm critical of these kinds of things because inevitably it starts off from the wrong position. The wrong position being it's somebody's job to permit us to do things that we have had the ability to do all along. We're waiting for recognition. Why? We're waiting for permission to discover ourselves. Why? We're waiting for consensus as to which way we ought to go. Why? We are an oppressed people, which means we should be in constant search of things that liberate us. We don't need to wait for permission and to formalize any of this stuff because it is supposed to be basic. It is supposed to be required that people should go to the library, they should read, they should look into their own families, they should do all this kind of work of self-discovery. That's your job. Because inevitably, when you go to these sources, you're going to libraries and books written for the specific purposes of dumbing you down. We have no program that we are controlling, that we initiate, that says we take ourselves very seriously, and not knowing who we are is a serious deficit, and we have to correct it. And it starts in your own family.
And you, Therese, I think the point of this idea is to do that because of the fact that we don't recognize enough, especially, you know, because we always get this, you know, we always get the narrative about our children being in these schools, but we don't recognize enough the accomplishments that some of our children have done. So that's something that, you know, that we probably should take into account because, you know, as much as we're being miseducated, there are a few of us who are, you know, doing what we're supposed to do, and these are going to be our future leaders.
Yeah, but let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it important to be recognized and to let people be, you know, to have people know? That's just public relations. Because everybody knows the truth. The truth is, we do not have, at least in the way that we need it, we do not have a consistent effort. And it's so simple. We don't need to wait for somebody to give us an idea. This is the stuff you do if you understand you're an oppressed person. you don't waste a minute waiting for approval. You get to work.
We spend so
much time and waste so much valuable time, in other words, looking for approval to do things that are in our interest. As if we don't get it, then whatever we deem to be in our interests will be deemed to be against other people's interests.
Well, Eutrice, you just mentioned what you just said. We are an oppressed people, and the mentality that we have is not going to change overnight. So we have to. I understand we're in a dire situation, but we have to move towards that direction. But you know as well as I do, a lot of people are not going to change overnight.
No, but you know that. Here's the thing: we have to be prepared to cut and run. We cannot wait for people to develop some kind of interest and then develop an idea that they ought to be doing certain things. It's been said for hundreds of years what needs to be done. If people don't get it, I mean, even the fundamentals, at some point you got to cut them off and go. You know, Harriet Tubman, who risked her life to go behind enemy lines more than 17 times to get slaves off of the plantation, had to threaten to shoot quite a few of them because they were going to botch up the whole operation. They couldn't understand what freedom was, and they were going to make everything just go right down the toilet. She had to threaten them into cooperating in their own salvation. Such is the enormous impact of oppression. We have a lot of people who just aren't ready, and they're not going to be ready anytime soon. You can't wait.
And I agree.
We cannot wait. If people are not ready to make even the smallest move, you got to leave them. Leave them. Come back to them when you have time.
And I agree.
But you got to keep moving.
You don't have to. And that's my whole thing. Don't worry about those people because you're not going to get everybody on board. So that's the reality that we have to come to a decision that we're not going to get everybody on board.
This was the point of all of the mass movements that have been organized so successfully in our community. Garvey, Elijah Muhammad, the Nation of Islam, Father John the Divine, in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't waiting for instructions. He started his movement and did a very good job considering what he had to work with. So at some point, we have to get over this idea that we have to wait for the appropriate time, excuse me, when we have arrived at a point of critical mass. No, you go with what you've got. 10 solid people committed is worth more than 1,000 people who are not. Thanks for getting us started today, Henry.
Thank you.
Nasheed from Westchester. You're on the air, Nasheed.
How you doing?
Okay. How are you?
All right. This is something out of a book, The Vanishing Right to Live. Inconvenient innocence, insignificant innocence. Then we go, I think it was Franz Fanon, sacrificial dedication. And... there's another one, victim-precipitated homicide. Now, I'm the people I'm around, I just stick to a couple of these things out of these books that we're caught up in. Now, when we walk down the street and we see our folks, it's a mixed-up thing. and they
well,
don't see.
My father was a very simple guy in this sense. Very brilliant, but he always brought things down to the lowest common denominator. And he would say to us, we used to have these sessions, would say to us, you have to have book sense, which is one thing, but you must have common sense.
Right.
A lot of us are seeking book sense, we're not paying attention to common sense.
Right.
And so we are stuck in a make-believe world in which we are gaining intellectual ground, and it's not true. We may be gaining intellectual ground, but look at the conditions of the people.
Mm.
These conditions don't reflect much intellectual ground gained, right? We got to get serious. We have to get serious. Start where you can.
You know, sometimes you play music. You might play Yusuf Lateef. You might play this. Our people don't even know who these folks are.
And that's on them.
That's the cultural assassination taken place.
You just said, I play this music because I love the music and I appreciate the beauty. I appreciate the genius and so forth. I'm not telling people they have to like the music. I'm just exposing you. Now, if somebody doesn't want to take it further, well, then it's up to them. Hope is that enough people would appreciate it and act on it to find out more. You see? Yeah. And this is where we have to come to at some point. We can do only so much, and then the rest is on them. The rest is on the folks. Thanks so much, Nasheed, for your call today. Ed from Jamaica, Queens, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Okay. How about you, Ed?
I'm good. Fortunately, I got a day off today, so I'm enjoying listening to you. I just wanted to agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, I've been hearing a lot of talk. I'm into a lot of groups and trying to do some political action here in South Jamaica. But the nonsense, the utter nonsense that I mean, especially with this Black Panther movie and how all these funds are being raised for it, and they're raising funds to take kids to see this movie about a fictional African character in a fictional African country. I mean, we've got to get serious. Things are serious for Black people in this country. The African Americans, descendants of slaves, I call us, we've got hookworm in Alabama because hookworm hasn't been an issue in this country since the 1930s, 1940s. We've got hookworm in Alabama because there isn't enough infrastructure for sanitation, proper septic systems in the African-American community. We got lead. We've got serious problems because we've dropped the ball. We've dropped the ball when it comes to government participation. We've dropped the ball when it comes to pushing our efforts across. We get caught up in fantasy schemes from Herbalife to Bitcoin to all this other garbage that's going on. And the real work that needs to be done, the unglamorous, the unrewarding, the work that has been going on to make the small gains that we do have, people have lost the vision for that. They've lost the drive. And I'm concerned. I'm really concerned because I don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. And that's the problem. We get caught up in fantasy. Have we become so bereft and so spirit broken that we need to believe in cartoon characters created by white people to make ourselves feel better? I don't know. You know, I don't know. I've faced this a lot of times, and you are one of the few voices that I can stand to listen to now because you make sense. And it's not that deep. You know, there's work to be done, and the work needs to be done. We got to grow up.
My boy. Huh? It really isn't that deep. It's very simple.
And the work needs to be done. And it can be done. It's not a Herculean task. And like you said, lead, follow, or get the F out of the way. You know what I mean? You got to cut some people off. Some people are not going to be there in the end. Some people are not, and they don't need to be there because the weight slows us down. That's it.
Thank you so much, Ed from Queens. Thanks for calling in today. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Professor. I have to say, Professor.
I keep telling folks, but you guys are the professors. I'm the student.
No. Let me correct Jose. It's not a you're not a professor. I just say that, but you're a juror. Okay, as far as I'm concerned, right? Nothing coming out of Hollywood we should be watching. Nothing. Because number one, we don't finance it. Number two is to confuse us and brainwash us and make us stupid. That's the bottom line. The media and their movies, those are the primary tools they use to confuse us and lie to us. So nothing that comes out of Hollywood we should be watching at all, period. Now, I say that they did the same thing with Malcolm X movie. Same thing. To demonize the Nation of Islam. That's all. And I've known this for quite some time. Since 1990, I do not have a television around me. And I don't think we should have one. Because we're too naive. We can't see why are you a juror among us? Simply because you could see things that we can't see. So having these things around you only makes the job more difficult of getting ourselves out of the condition we're in. Okay, look, for those who are lucky and fortunate to have you and Gary, the majority of the work is already done because every time you two people, and now there are others in PRN sit in front of a microphone. Your life is on the line because you're speaking truth to the people. You see what I'm saying? Now, where we fail is that we have not done our part to help you guys in PRN because we know this. And the condition that America is in is because of the ignorance of the masses of the American people. You see what I'm saying? So if we were doing our job, like spreading the word, because everybody should be listening to PRN, not CNN and, you know, that kind of stupidity.
I get your point. We're running out of time, Willie, so okay. You can summarize we can get your last thoughts.
All right.
That's it? All right, you summarize. Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. And we continue talking with each other, transmitting ideas back and forth. And hopefully this will continue to mushroom. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Minds with Eric Davis. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye. I can rub and scrub till this old house is shining like a dime.